my name is Nora Sadek, and we're in Duluth, Minnesota. So the Muslim community in Duluth, we're a really small group. They're mostly young families and some people who are working in the hospitals. We weren't going to have like an organized like Muslim Student Association the first year that I came to Duluth. But I was like, no, come on, you know, we should have a group. And, you know, and so we did form the group, even though there were about three of us to start. And now the group, I think, has about 20 people. Our prayer service is every Friday. So they offer the Friday prayers both at the University of Minnesota Duluth campus and also the local mosque. And there's one mosque in the whole Twin Ports area. So, and we became the official, you know, we were purchasing the building from the Unitarians in Duluth. They had moved to a different building. And so they had this one and we were purchasing that building. They finally purchased it last year in September. So we officially became the only Islamic center throughout the Twin Ports area. So we have families that come from Superior, Wisconsin, or other parts of Wisconsin, and Hibbing and northern Minnesota, sometimes during the potlucks or during Ramadan, during the monthly fasting, time of fasting. We'll have community dinners, and they'll come. My mother is Native American. She's actually an Alaska Native from Tsimshian tribe. So it's a royalty tribe in southeast Alaska. And so we're a rare breed. She was born and raised over there and lived in Seattle, Washington most of her life. My father is Egyptian. He was born in Alexandria, Egypt, and he was raised there until he went to Britain for a while and then came to the States back in the early 80s to study. And how they got married is a whole different story. Well, my mother was raised Roman Catholic. She went to Roman Catholic school. And then when she went to college, she worked in the international business office. And so she got exposed to a lot of Iranian students that their government was sending over to study engineering during the revolution. And that was her first exposure to Islam. As a child, you know, when I asked my mom, you know, how she came to Islam, and she came to Islam before she married my dad. You know, it's sad sometimes that you always have to reinforce that point. Because some of the common stereotype is that, you know, a woman will become Muslim to marry somebody who is Muslim. But that wasn't the case with my mom. So in college, she was first exposed to that. But she had already started this religious soul searching. And she had read about Eastern faith. And she was studying to become a Native American education liaison. And so she was investigating, like, Native American faith and aspects of that culture, and nothing was really fitting with her at the time. She said one thing that really touched her about Islam is that one of the people that she was working with, financial-wise, he was so excited about bringing his wife over the following year, and that she had to meet her, and that, you know, this was going to make his studying, you know, worthwhile and everything. And my mom said she was so touched by, like, how deep the family connection was. And so when this person's wife came over, she gave my mom a gift. She gave her like a few small books about Islam. And there was not a lot of English material at the time in the early 80s. So they did find something in English for her. And then they gave her a nice like prayer shawl and a little gift from Iran. So my mom decided to like start reading more and more about Islam. And then she became Muslim. She had told her family that she had become Muslim. But her mother and her sisters were somewhat surprised that she had chosen to choose a different faith. But the one thing that really bothered my grandmother, at least from what my mom tells me, is that she said, okay, well, you can choose this faith. Just don't look like you've chosen this faith. Don't cover. Don't wear the headscarf. Don't put that label. It's okay. We can take you as that. And my mom didn't start covering right away. She didn't. She was very new to Islam. She didn't really know, and so she hadn't started covering. But she had worked her way towards that. And after that happened, there was like some tension ties and family breakthrough. So my mom was alone. So growing up in a bicultural home is always interesting. And what's so beautiful is a lot of Native faith and a Native culture is very in tune with Islam as well. It's very family-oriented, it's very cyclical, it's very community yet individual, you know, the individual living in the community. And she would always share that. My mom would always share with us, you know, Native stories or You know, we used to go to powwows, and those are different because they're more the what we call the lower 48 Native Americans versus the Alaska Natives. But still, my mom wanted us to be exposed to also who we were, because I'm half Native American. My mother is full blood.
Did you go to Egypt often?
When we were younger, we used to go about every 2 or 3 years, especially when my grandparents were alive, my dad's family, because all of my dad's family is over there. My uncles and their kids, my cousins, they're all overseas. Because my mother, almost in a way, because of choosing Islam, became separated from her family, and a lot of the things that were going on with some of the stereotypical assumptions that people attach to being Native, you know, she wanted us to have a family. She wanted us to feel connected and loved and to know what family is. And so she really helped and encouraged that as well. So I was raised Muslim all my life. What's been really great is, okay, so in a lot of the communities that we lived in, the first community that we lived in North Carolina, like where most of my childhood was a town of 500 people. We didn't have a zip code. We borrowed it from the neighboring city or town. So we were the only Muslims in the whole community that they had been exposed to. And I remember even as early as second grade, I was fasting. But they didn't know like what to do with you when you're fasting, you know. And I grew up in the South. And so they thought maybe that I was too poor to eat because we lived with a lot of poor families. So they'd be like, oh, it's okay, honey. I'll buy you lunch. You know, it's okay, honey. You don't have to. I'm like, no, I'm fasting. They're like, oh, yeah, we understand. No, it's okay. Come on. Yeah, don't worry about it. Because there was a lot of rural community there. And so there were children that I went to school with that did not have money to eat. But I said, no, this is my religion. I'm Muslim. And so I remember even like fourth grade teachers, you know, bringing me to their class then over lunch and, okay, tell us what this Ramadan is. Tell us what this fasting is. Tell us what, you know, who you are and what you're doing. And but I do believe that it was a genuine curiosity as to what Islam was and who I was as this little person, you know, who had this identity already, you know, from a spiritual religious aspect. And I did feel that it was very welcoming, I remember, in it. It was kind of almost odd that I was in that position, you know. I felt very lucky to be in that position, to be able to let people know. And I think you always learn more when it's a peer-to-peer than just some, you know, adult or a teacher giving you a lecture, you know. So then we moved to Byron. We moved to Byron in August. And it was funny because when we moved there, again, we were the only Muslims that had ever lived in Byron. And the local newspaper, it was called the Byron Review, and they came by to interview my mom and my dad. And we were on the front page of the newspaper saying, Muslim family moves and finds Byron a friendly town, you know? We even have the article. We were at school, and they had come and, you know, taken pictures of my mom and my dad, and, oh, how do you like Byron, and how do you live, and what does it mean to be Muslim? And like, this was just like the coolest thing that ever hit Byron, you know, this small, like 3,500 person town. You know, the highlight was Dairy Queen. You know, if you drive by it, you missed it. So I decided to start covering in eighth grade. It was a big transition anyway. We're going to high school, and, you know, I thought it'd be a good time to cover as well. It had been something I was thinking about, and I discussed, like, with my mom and things like that, because it's something when you choose to do it, you know, you don't want to fall back on it. You know, when you choose to cover, you stay covering, you know, throughout its difficulty or throughout its challenge as well. So it had been something I was thinking about, but I thought it was a good time. And so I remember on the last day of school, seventh grade, I was telling my friends, I was like, okay, you know, I think I've decided to start covering next year. And, oh, that's great, Nora. And, you know, we'll support you and everything and whatever. And I was like, oh, thanks, guys. You're great, you know. And then I remember the first day of eighth grade. And my mom always had, you know, like this thing where, like, the first day of school, she'd always drop everybody off. So I got dropped off last because now I'm at the high school. I remember being dropped off. And then I go to the eighth grade wing. And it was like Moses and the Red Nile, you know? It just, like, totally split in half. They didn't know who this person was. And I was just like, dude, you guys, just like 3 months ago, I was the same Nora that you knew. You know, nothing's changed. And they treated me as if I was a new student, you know? And some of the faculty was not ready with the visual appearance of being Muslim. They had been okay with it before when I was like, say I was Muslim. But it was like, you know, like what my mom described with her mom. You didn't look Muslim, you know. Now I looked it. So I remember there was one teacher. He would pick on me all the time. Anything. Like, oh, your scarf is on the wrong way. And you know, you're in high school, so like your looks are like totally important. And you'd be like, oh my God, what? You know, or he would try to make a comment about something in class. Or I always felt like I was singled out. Whether it was because he was uncomfortable with me being Muslim or what, I don't know. But so there were things like that. So what became interesting is that Byron, some of its teachers were starting to do their master's in teaching. And so they had to find a person, a student of diversity to interview. So everybody's like, oh, Nora, Nora, Nora. You know, I was like the only speck of diversity. We didn't have any Hispanic families. We didn't have Chinese families. We didn't have any African-American families. We were very, you know, Norwegian, Minnesota, small town, you know, school. And so when the teachers had to do their diversity project, Nora was the girl to interview. So, and I didn't realize what some of my teachers thought of me until that interview. And some were like, oh, you're doing this because, you know, doing this, meaning you're covering because your dad's making you do this, right? I was like, no, I'm choosing to do this. Or, you know, like, oh, you know, like, because, you know, guys can marry like four wives or something like that, you're not as important. Or, you know, things that were in the backwaters of this whole time that I was in high school that my teachers were thinking of me. And so it was a real eye-opening experience for both of us, I think, you know, as the teachers interviewing me and as me speaking with them. One of the teachers said, yeah, I didn't know that you spoke English. You know, I was like, well, it's my first language, you know? Oh, that would be 2001, right before September 11th. Yeah, I remember September 11th. So I remember going home that day, and my mom said that she had visited all the schools because one of the first reports was that they were blaming Al-Qaeda and, you know, some Muslim fundamentalist group for doing this. You know, we were just in shock as everybody else. And Muslims had died in the World Trade Center as well. And so my mom had gone to the principals of the school. And she's like, you know, I just wanted to let you all know that I spoke to your principals. You know, we say inshallah, like God willing, nothing's going to happen. But just so you know. So we're like, okay, why? What are we expecting to happen, you know? We didn't get it. I didn't get it. Until I got shoved in a locker. And people told me to go back home. They told me, you know, to go back where I came from. And then I used to walk home. Which was like maybe like a 20-minute walk or something like that from the high school. And I remember walking home one time. And people were throwing beer bottles at me, you know, saying that, you know, that I was some like evil spirited person. And then of course, you know, beautiful four little words and birdies flying out the window. And I'm scared to death because I'm like, I don't know what's happening. I don't, you know, I didn't have anything to do with this. I was born in America. I was raised in America. I am American. I've been going to Byron High School with you since you started Byron High School, you know, but there was a huge dichotomy that happened between understanding me as the person. It was kind of like that first day of eighth grade when I started covering. It's like, oh my God, who are you anymore? And so it was rough for a while. It was rough for a while until people understood. And then I had to explain, like, this is not Islam. This is not Muslims. This is not, and I didn't have any, you know, vindictive feelings against anybody. You know, I've always respected you as a person, and we had to have like this dialogue, but it was almost, I had to volunteer the dialogue because it wasn't going to happen unless I made the effort to reach out and be like, okay, I think we need to understand, you know, what is going on and how it's affecting everybody. It's affecting me just as much as it's affecting you. You know, this is my country and I grew up here and I used to live in New York. I remember the World Trade Center, you know. So I became the first Muslim woman to ever graduate from Byron High School. And I became, again, the first Muslim woman to graduate with a biology degree at St. Mary's University. Me, my sister, and my brother were the only three Muslims on campus. I'm actually the first Muslim woman to enter the history of this medical school as well. And so I will be the first one to graduate from the University of Minnesota Duluth campus.
So tell me about that. Is that exciting because you feel like you're pioneering? Is it annoying because you feel like you're under a microscope? What is that like?
Oh my goodness, it's the whole spectrum. Some days it's tough, you know, and some days you feel a lot of pressure. Because some days you don't get an off day, you know? Because somebody might attribute that to your faith. Somebody might attribute that to what it means to be Muslim. So sometimes there's extra pressure. And sometimes I can't say that all the experiences have been grand, you know? When people are faced with something that's totally different from how they're raised or how their worldview is, it takes maybe a different type of approach and appreciation of that to be able to be welcomed in that environment. But it's also an amazing learning experience for everyone. I learned so much from my peers and from all the students and faculty and staff that I've been at in different institutions, and they've helped me to grow in many ways as a person, as I hope I have helped them to grow. You know, I'm not here to tell you your faith is right and your faith is wrong and this is that and this is not this. That's not what my job is. And that's not what Islam teaches us. So it's always been really great because in some ways, you know, to be a pioneer is always great, but it's always hard too on the pioneer, you know. Sometimes it's really hard because, you know, like you want to be the best example that you can and you want to show the best that you can, but you're human in a way too. So you are going to make mistakes. But to know that these mistakes are because you are human, just like everybody else. You know, they're not because of your faith, or they're not because you're Muslim, or they're not because you're different. And also sometimes it's hard because, you know, like when you have those off days, or, you know, sometimes you're just like, every waking moment you feel like I have to explain myself, you know, because this is something so new to them. Maybe you just want one day off, you know, be like, somebody knows why I pray, why I fast, why I'm doing this, why I'm saying that. Or I was just overseas this summer, so before the whole revolution and everything. And I've always loved Egypt. You know, Egypt is a beautiful place. It's a beautiful country. It's rich with history, the culture, and the people. But because I really felt when I was there this summer that people had forgotten the beauty of what it means to be Egyptian. You know, you speak to my cousins, and they're like, no hope of attaining anything in their life, you know, getting married, getting a good job, getting a good education. And people were so oppressed by corruption and by abuse of power that I told them, I was like, something's going to pop, you know. And when I came home, I was like, there's something going to happen. But what's so unique is that Egyptians are usually like very passive aggressive people, you know, and for them to reach the point that they were going to unify for one goal, to stop corruption and to be remembered as human, you know, and human beings, is very incredible. And I mean, I feel very lucky to be living through history, and hopefully, I hope to go back sometime and do some international work and work with the medical care system. That was part of why I was going back in the summer as well, to make some connections in some hospitals and free clinics that I hope to contribute to in the future. It's very much like my mom always tells us, like a part of Native faith, you give back to your community. You know, and I feel so lucky, you know, that I had opportunities throughout my life, and I got to visit Egypt a lot and you know, and have fun there and, you know, enjoy all of its greatness. So I should try to contribute and give something back to honor that. What I've really loved about Minnesota and Minnesotans is that they're very curious. But I know that hardcore Norwegian, you know, kind of like, we don't want to be offensive and we don't want to like push on anybody's toes, that sometimes we miss asking the questions, or I think we miss some of the dialogues that we should be having because we're trying to be overly polite. And, you know, that Minnesota nice, you know, it's also, I feel that because, like, how I describe Minnesota is like, you know, we have to love each other. We really do. Because when you're out and you're stuck in a ditch somewhere, you better help a brother out, you know? Minnesotans have that wonderful connection with each other because of the environment that we live in. And we know how it is to struggle, you know, way more than other states. You know, like when I go out in the South, it's like, oh, wow, car broke down, it's sunny, oh, I'll just walk to the gas station. You know, it's not like 40 below. You have like hurricane force winds blowing you over. And so we have like that deeper appreciation of like human struggle. And to be different sometimes is a struggle. but it's also a gift. And we're only going to appreciate those gifts that we all can offer if we have these dialogues and if we start seeing that, you know, just because I'm Muslim doesn't mean I'm living like a totally different life, you know, even in Minnesota. You know, I'm doing the same thing. I bring out my boots. I shovel the driveway. I got to scrape my car. You know, we're all doing the same thing, you know, and we all appreciate the same things. But maybe my daily practice of how I'm expressing those thoughts and ideologies is different.